So again, we've got Connor Boyack. Connor, are you there?
I am, Jake. How are you?
I'm doing well. Happy holidays, New Year's, all that kind of stuff. Haven't really talked to you since then.
Et cetera, et cetera. Same to you.
So, guns. In the last month have been in the news, but then again, Alex Jones and Piers Morgan kind of had their own pay-per-view pro wrestling match last night as well. Is that what you want to talk about today?
Yeah, I mean, I kind of want to carry the conversation. I've been listening into the most of your show today and wanted to take the topic, keep it on the same subject but in a slightly different direction, because I think it helps to kind of expand the discussion rather than on just the issue of, you know, the conversation that Alex Jones and Piers Morgan had. Piers Morgan, of course, has become kind of the spokesman, as you note, in recent weeks for the gun control movement.
Yes.
He's been talking all about it on his show. He's been promoting his favorite statistics, which I think Alex could have done a much better job at rebutting. For example, comparing, you know, 35 gun homicides in Britain versus the 11,000 here is ridiculous when you don't balance it out for population and account for, you know, looking at the per capita statistics.
Well, but what it reminded me of was really the trick that Hannity did with Hannity and Combs, right? So they'd pretend to be balanced, but it was like Hannity had this much more likable persona, whereas Combs is kind of this nerdy, couldn't really get his point across. And that's kind of what they played last night. Like Piers Morgan, you said, is the spokesperson for this anti-gun movement.
He was the civil one. He was the...
Yeah, and he came off much better, and I totally disagree with him, but I think it was, again, Piers Morgan picking and choosing his opponent so he could basically keep the belt. You know what I mean?
Well, and so this isn't the first, you know, discussion that's been had. This isn't the first time Piers Morgan's talked about. For example, he had recently on his show, it was middle of December, he had Larry Pratt, who's the executive director of Gun Owners for America.
Yes, I've met him. Great guy.
And so he was on the show. Now, for those who don't know, Gun Owners of America is a better organization than the NRA. The NRA kind of has your more corporate hunting-oriented guns, whereas Larry Pratt, Gun Owners of America, these guys are much more bold, much more, you know, very, not just Second Amendment generally, but the individual right to keep and bear arms.
Well, actually, Gun Owners of America is what most people think the NRA actually is. And the NRA is actually totally sellouts.
Right.
But the Gun Owners of America is actually like, no, this isn't about hunting. This is about protecting yourself, not only from bad guys on the street, criminals, but bad guys and criminals in government.
Right. And so, you know, the conversation was interesting. In fact, you know, I think Larry bested Piers Morgan a few weeks ago, although Piers Morgan was extremely arrogant, extremely insulting to Pratt. What I found more interesting, though, is, you know, Piers Morgan hasn't been the only one. There was a couple weeks ago, Chris Matthews on MSNBC, you know, kind of a like-minded brother of Piers Morgan, very kind of bleeding heart liberal and progressive. He had Larry Pratt on as well, along with a former agent from the Bureau of Alcohol and Tobacco and Firearms. And so they were having a discussion, and Larry dropped a bomb, which is the subject of what I want to talk about for the segment today, that all this discussion, of course, it's all kind of in the wake of Newtown and you know, why we should be able to have guns and why do we need AR-15s. But what Larry Pratt talked about is that these guns aren't just for hunting. They aren't just for self-defense. What he said on the show, which sparked several minutes of debate, and Chris Matthews was just completely befuddled, is that we have the guns ultimately to prevent against tyrannical government, right? We have the guns specifically to ward off the threat of big government. So do you have the clip queued up that I sent?
Yeah, you want to play that now?
So let's go ahead and play that, and then I want to have a discussion that to talk about his contention that ultimately the guns isn't just to prevent against the common criminal. We have guns ultimately to ward off the threat of tyrannical government. So it's a two-minute clip. Let's go ahead and play it.
This be a less free country if you couldn't have an assault rifle.
Yeah, because we have guns fundamentally protected by the Second Amendment.
Well, wait a minute. Why would anyone?
I thought you'd hear that. Yes, we have guns in order to control the government.
And where have assault rifles been useful in controlling the size or direction or policy of the United States government in our history?
Well, the Brown Bess rifle was used to win our independence. The militiamen's...
From the British?
Yes.
Let's talk about our government.
The militiamen used their militia rifles under Andy Jackson to defend New Orleans against the British. So
against
we
the British.
Do have a history.
When have guns been useful in curtailing
Athens,
the power or purpose of the federal
Athens,
government?
Athens, Tennessee, 1946. Townsmen rose up against corrupt government and threw them out at the point of a gun.
Keep going.
Is that not enough?
I want more. I want to know where your head's going here.
I'm just telling
you. So you're like Sharon Angle out in Nevada, who said we need the Second Amendment rights when our politicians get out of hand.
That's what the Second Amendment is all for. She's not making that up.
So how would you use your Second Amendment rights if you didn't like the way your senator or congressman was representing you?
Well, we have a political action committee, and we try to beat
No, but how would you use your Second Amendment rights, which you're now extolling?
By being prepared. We don't have to go and shoot anybody.
What do you have the threat, though?
You know, I think it bothers lawmakers that we do have that capability, and sometimes they kind of let it loose when they're not quite in control.
So, Larry, it's not just the right to use guns to protect your home. It's the right to use guns to take on your government.
The government has been overboard.
So you're saying the menacing quality... I want to give you more minute here. The menacing quality of the gun owners is what limits the size of the United States government. Have you noticed the United States government has gotten rather big lately?
Do you really think
it's working?
The Israelis used to think la-di-da about having guns.
Oh, here we go.
They finally got it figured out, and after some Muslim terrorists killed a busload of kids, they started arming.
But anybody in Israel, I've read the reports on this, you have to be qualified. There's a whole rule you have to go through to get
concealed,
guns.
Concealed carriers
are qualified.
Yeah, they've taken the preparation.
All right. So let me go, David.
So is that kind of what you wanted, or did you want
to? Yeah, so that kind of brings up the larger discussion that they began to have, and that is ultimately the contention that we have guns, yes, to hunt, yes, to provide for, you know, food if that's what you want to use it for, yes, to prevent against the common criminal, but ultimately they are a last and final check against an oppressive government.
Well, and what I find interesting is Gary Pratt, Larry Pratt didn't want to go into the controversy. And I understand he's got, you know, donations and stuff he's got to get. But, I mean, right here, in fact, there's a protest, Enough is Enough, in Ogden tonight, to talk about this Matthew David Stewart case and the Ogden police out there. Matthew David Stewart is being smeared as a cop killer and whatnot. And frankly, all he did was defend himself when a bunch of guys who actually weren't in police gear busted into his house. He thought it was a home invasion or whatever, and shot back. I mean, really? That's what we're talking about?
And it's harder in specific circumstances, right? Because you talk about the nuance of, well, was that a legitimate warrant? Is that the proper issue for them to invade someone's home with guns? Was he justified in fighting back? And so when you get into specific circumstances, I think it's often harder to determine, you know, the legitimacy, although I think you and I would definitely agree on the Matthew David Stewart case.
What about Waco? Waco, I mean,
right.
same thing.
And so ultimately, you know, you have a situation, I think we're too myopic when we look at just the United States government and the history of the federal government, right? Throughout the 20th century, and Alex Jones, I think, in fact, alluded to this a little bit in his interview, that throughout the 20th century, an estimated 262 million people were killed by their own government throughout the world.
Democide.
And he threw out the term, it's called democide, the instances in which the government uses guns to kill its own unarmed citizens. And so, yes, as nice as it is in the United States that we have a government that ostensibly, you know, tries to defend us from our enemies and protect us, though that isn't always the case, throughout the world history, you have had numerous instances of unarmed populations who became enemies, whether political or cultural or religious or otherwise, of the ruling class. And so they were unarmed. They didn't have guns. They could not defend themselves against the regimes. So you throw out these numbers and you realize how horrendous this is. In the USSR, they killed 62 million unarmed citizens.
Yeah, it's funny because everybody always seems to go, the go-to guy always seems to be Hitler, but it was really Stalin who was actually even worse than Hitler.
Well, and Mao, too. Mao had 45 million people, right, dead in China. Nazi Germany, of course, 21 million, so by no means is that a small number, but, you know, a third of what Stalin and USSR did. Japan, 6 million. Cambodia, 2 million. And so you have all these instances of governments that turn on their own citizens. So people think, well, that can't happen here. This is the United States, land of the free. That's not the case, and we need to protect against that. The guns allow us to do it.
Yeah, hold on. We'll be right back. We got a couple callers. Guys, we'll bring you right back, put you right on the air after the break. Come on back. Mental self-defense. K-Talk, Voice of Utah. All right, guys, we're back. Last segment, you want to get in on the conversation. We're in the middle of the Boyack Review. Connor's talking about going deeper into the gun argument, why we actually do this. Why do we care? that it's not for hunting, taking more of the perspective that it is, as he in the clip that he provided with Larry Pratt from Gun Owners of America, that it is really to control the size and scope of government. Now, Connor, we've got a caller here. You want to take him real quick?
Sure, let's go.
Okay, hold on just a second. Let me bring him in. Caller, thanks for holding. What is your name?
Hi, my name is Paul.
Hi, Paul.
Hey, I think I would have answered Mr. Matthew's question in this way. The fact that we haven't had mass genocide in this country, if you eliminate the disaster with the American Indian, if you eliminate that from the equation, we haven't had concentration camps like Auschwitz and Dachau and Buchenwald in this country simply because of the fact that we have hundreds of millions of guns in private hands. So to answer Mr. Matthews, it has worked brilliantly so far. That's why we haven't had to take up arms against our government. But in Europe, where they have widespread gun control, we see that about every quarter century or so, American boys with rifles have to go over there and untangle their can of worms. So that would have been my answer to Mr. Matthews.
I think that's a good point, right? I think Chris Matthews was wrong to talk about that the guns are used to somehow control the size and scope of government, as he said, or the policy. It's not that any time we disagree that taxes are being incrementally raised by 1.1% too much that we then, you know, pull out the AR-15 and pack over to D.C. to let them know that we disagree. It's not necessarily to be used on that, you know, small of a level. It's when there are outright infringements, clear violations of our individual liberties, that we can then defend ourselves when the soldiers show up to disarm us or to, you know, deprive us of our lives or liberty or possession.
Hey, great call. Caller, anything else you wanted to add?
Well, a couple of things. One, I get a lot of emails concerning the so-called FEMA camps, which I think is total baloney. But because it's laughable on its face, because if you can imagine frightening 150 million Americans with guns, I mean, you wouldn't last a week. And number two, the Swiss, in my mind, is the model that the founders modeled us on. Because they haven't fought in a war in about 500 years, and they've retained their freedom and avoided war for all this time simply because they have a huge citizen army. And there's a famous account of the exchange between Joseph Goebbels, who was sent over to Switzerland just prior to the invasion of France to explore the Swiss backbone as to whether or not the Nazis would invade France through Switzerland. And so during the conversation, Goebbels mentioned that Switzerland had a 550,000-man army made up of trained citizens, and the president said, yes, we do. We train on the range twice each month. We are all excellent marksmen, and we have our rifles at home. And Goebbels said, well, what would you do if we invaded the Swiss frontier with a million-man army? And the president said, we would all shoot twice and go home.
That's brilliant.
So the rest is history. They didn't go through Switzerland. They went through Belgium, which has virtually no private gun ownership, per se. So, you don't have to be a, you know, mathematician to figure out why they didn't go through Switzerland.
Oh, no. I totally get it. And the whole thing is they're testing with these gun-free zones and trying to expand the radius of the gun-free zone until...
I haven't seen any mass shootings at gun shows.
Yeah, exactly.
All right, thanks for your program.
Appreciate the call. Good points. So, Connor, I mean, we look down the chessboard. There are, look, the thing that is actually ironic to me, every time one of these things happens, it's like the best ad for gun sales.
Oh, yeah.
Every time. I mean, right, you're involved even now that KSL tried to... to control people's access to guns on their website. You had a hand, you, Kenny Barlow, and a few other people in putting together this Utah Gun Exchange.
Mm-hmm.
And guns, I mean, are scarce. People are going nuts. Ammo, guns, I mean, I don't think that... I really think that that's a big, difficult task to disarm the Americans. I think it's a difficult task.
Well, and it has happened on a smaller scale. For example, you look right after Hurricane Katrina... Right, the police force was tasked with going out and confiscating
door to door,
weapons,
right?
And they did it. And
yep.
American citizens relinquished. It wasn't this, you know, they got their holster and they got their, you know, their sling full of rounds and a shotgun and everything ready to go and fight the cops who were coming. It was these folks who were in a traumatic environment. They were very worried, and they were very compliant, and they ultimately surrendered their guns en masse. And so you say, well, if that can happen over an entire city, why can't it happen over an entire county or state or country? I think we give too much credit to kind of the Wild West frontier mentality that people seem to think that they have, or seem to think that many other people have. And what you remind me, that name of that study where people who were, they were compliant to authority and zapping.
Yeah, the Milgram experiment,
right?
Mm-hmm.
The extent to which people are willing to obey authority, even when it goes against their own moral code, their own sense of what is right and wrong. And this is a proven experiment, time and time again, in all sorts of different recreations, showing that people ultimately will obey authority, largely, not universally. And so I think that if there is some sort of gun confiscation, it's not going to be as difficult as the previous caller indicated it might be, and as many people believe. I think that many people would, because it would be done in an environment and with language and propaganda to help people assuage their own consciences and realize that this is the right thing to do and it's for the public good. And ultimately, that's how it's happened in the past. In fact, you know, we were talking about Joseph Goebbels, and you had mentioned Hitler previously. Hitler has a great quote, not a great quote, but is a very relevant quote to the issue, where he says, the most foolish mistake we could possibly make would be to allow the subject races, as he called them, to possess arms. History shows, again, this is Hitler, history shows that all conquerors who have allowed their subject races to carry arms have prepared their own downfall by so doing. This was clear recognition by a dictator that he would only be successful to the extent he was able to disarm those who he was attempting to control and kill. And so this is a recognition that you see play out time and time again. As we mentioned before the break, all these countries where there have been tyrannical dictatorships, mass murder, genocide on the to the tune of dozens of millions, tens of millions. For example,
Hold on just a sec, Connor. Sorry to interrupt.
Sure.
But we've got a caller. Let me just bring them in real quick, see what they want to say. Caller, you are on the air. What is your name?
I'm sorry. I had to call back. There were several accounts that I saw on cable news network during that Katrina thing that discussed incidents where the police would paddle up to a group of citizens on dry land who were well armed with these terrible weapons we're discussing, and were told that they had to submit to surrendering their firearms, and they told the police to come get them, you know, ask them how bad do you want these guns, and they would not disarm, and the police found something else to do. So, you know, I don't know what study they're quoting here, but there were many instances where law-abiding citizens did not hand over their firearms during Katrina.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, appreciate it. Appreciate the call. Anything else? Nope. Okay. So anyway, sorry, Connor.
No, and that's all right. That's a very fair point, and it's reconciled easily with what I said, that it wouldn't be a universal thing. There would be people who would fight back. There are people who feel very strongly about not surrendering their guns, and so it wouldn't be a universal thing at all. But when you throw out the number that 262 million people have been killed in the 20th century alone by their own government, you realize that there's something larger in play. There's a reason why we should be able to maintain and keep the right to keep and bear arms. There was a conference, like a congress that was held, a worldwide congress in Paris in 1967. It was called the International Society for the Prevention of Crime. And they were discussing how to prevent genocide, right? Because by then you had had this mass genocide, you had had these tens of millions, hundreds of millions by then who were killed by their own government. And they concluded, this is a quote from this International Society for the Prevention of Crime on the subject of preventing genocide. They said, defensive measures are the most effective means for the prevention of genocide. Not all aggression is criminal. A defense reaction is, for the human race, what the wind is for navigation. The result depends on the direction. Mm. The most moral violence is that used in legitimate self-defense, the most sacred judicial institution. Right? So you have this world body of politicians and delegates and ambassadors and the like getting together, and to make a statement like that was rather compelling, I think, given the trend with which such worldwide conferences tend to go and being anti-gun and that kind of thing. You had this specific and explicit recognition that legitimate self-defense is the proper and ultimate and most moral check against genocide, against the tendency of governments to grow large and powerful and ultimately tyrannical. Alex Jones yesterday. I believe, was it yesterday that that show aired, or was it a previous?
No, it was yesterday. Yeah, that it aired.
So on that segment with Piers Morgan, Alex Jones, you know, pointed his finger at Piers Morgan and said, you know, 1776 will happen again if you try and take our guns, something to that effect, harkening back to the revolution of 1776. When we're talking about democide, when we're talking about owning and training with and using or being prepared to use guns to defend against tyrannical government, we need to remember that, you know, the revolution in 1776 was fomented in large measure by the ruling government's attempts to disarm its citizens. So here you had the crown, King George's government. They were using arbitrary searches and seizures, false promises of safekeeping. They were using entrapment. They had an outright ban on the export of firearms and ammunition from England to the colonies. So they were clamping down on the colonists' right to keep and bear arms. Sam Adams, for example, he wrote that the British, quote, told us we shall have no more guns, no powder to use, and kill our wolves and other game. So this was about gun control. Even back in the days right up leading to the revolution of 1776, there was a confidential order written by the king in 1774 where he forbade the exportation of arms and gunpowder to the colonies, mandated that all the different governors of the different colonies prevent the importation into their colonies of these types of items, the firearms and ammunition. So we talk about this liberty or death speech, this moving Patrick Henry speech, and it's in that speech where he talks about, you know, to what extent are we going to allow this usurpation to occur? He talks about, are we going to wait until we're totally disarmed? The context of that famous speech was the gun control that was being perpetrated. And so then when you have in 1775 in April, the governor of Massachusetts dispatching about 700 soldiers to go seize the arms and munition that's being stored by the colonial militia, that's where you have the shot heard around the world. That's where you have the revolution triggered. It was about the government, the ruling government, trying to disarm its citizens. That broke out an entire revolution. So in that to that extent, I think Alex Jones is right, that these types of events have in the past and very well could in the future lead to an outbreak of revolution of some sort.
Right, now, hold on, Connor. I got another caller that's been holding pretty long here. Let me get him in, too. Caller, you're on the air. What do you want to say? Caller, you're on the air. Yes, you. If you're on the phone, that's you. There's only one person. Caller, going once. Hello? Goodbye. All right, sorry, Connor.
That's all right. So, you know, hopefully it doesn't get to that point. We don't want it to escalate to that point. We want to be able to restore and reclaim and maintain our rights through peaceful means, through persuasive means, and not through the gun, because that's how we are ruled right now by the state, is through the gun. But we need to recognize that the guns exist for a legitimate reason, and that is to protect our rights. So Joseph Story, he was one of the early founders. He was on the Supreme Court. He wrote that the right to keep and bear arms is liberty's best defense, since it offers a strong moral check against the usurpation and arbitrary power of rulers, and will generally, he says, even if these are successful in the first instance, enable the people to resist and triumph over them. He's not the only one. So many of the founders, the framers of the Constitution, founders of this country, repeatedly talked about the dangers of standing armies, the importance of the militia, the right to keep and bear arms, that these guns aren't just to go hunting, they're not to help protect your family, they are to exist to maintain your rights against the threat of growing and tyrannical government. Hopefully it doesn't get to that point. We don't want it to get to that point. But ultimately, I think Larry Pratt, talking to Chris Matthews, was correct. That sounds bombastic to say. It sounds very radical in the PC era that we live in. But ultimately, the guns exist to protect us and defend our rights against the government. That's
all right, hold on. I think the caller called back. Caller, are you there?
Hey, Jake. This is a great show.
Yeah.
This is Bo calling.
Hey, Bo, you got like 1 minute, buddy.
Yeah, I know. I only got a minute. I think the problem that we have, we've lost the argument because the left dictate the terms when they couch the argument emotionally. We come from an intellectual high ground. We come from the moral high ground, but we're never going to win this argument because we can't bring forth the same emotional argument.
Well, if the right is represented by people like Mitt Romney, then the right's gone too.
Well, okay, the right's gone, but okay, let's talk about the Patriot Movement. The Patriot Movement, the people that come from a rational, truly balanced libertarian perspective, we lose because of the appeal to emotion. We can never beat that.
No, I agree. This is why I was hoping that somebody, instead of Alex Jones, and maybe more of a Stefan Molyneux, somebody who's more persuasive, you know, would be on there. Hey, I appreciate the call, Bo. I'm sorry, we got to run.
That's fine.
I appreciate the call, though. No, good point. So, Connor, closing up, you got about 20 seconds. Where do we go from here? I mean, you know, go to Utah Gun Exchange, support, you know, the market for it, make sure that we have it in case things go south.
I think one of the best things we can do in my 10 seconds left is to merely portray ourselves as civil, law-abiding, reasonable people who recognize the right to keep and bear arms, that we're not crazy, that we have them for a reason, and that we exercise our rights to maintain them.
Good point, man. All right, guys. Thanks, Connor. We'll see you guys tomorrow.